Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Tuesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXE Acre 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend to taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Usually at this point, we would introduce our guest. However, given that today marks the end of our third year, we want to take the opportunity to reflect on some of the best moments from 2016.
You are about to hear excerpts from shows with Laura McEnany, Judd Weisberg, Pete Lopez, Anthony Accomando, Victor Nelson, Jack Sensabar, Brian Reed, Alana Medlock, Phil Potak, Josh Fromer, and Elizabeth Henry.
These are some of our favorite moments, and we hope you enjoy listening to them as much as we do.
Your next item that you'd like to bring is for writing, a pencil eraser. You call an eraser a rubber?
We do.
That's what you call them. It's something else over here.
Yeah, something else, yeah.
Yes. It's also the same here. But yeah, obviously I was told I couldn't have any electronic equipment.
That's right.
So my faithful laptop would have to take a rest. So yeah, I would rather write with paper and pencil, preferably pencil. Because I usually make quite a lot of mistakes.
Right.
Interesting.
Now, can I just ask, now you're going to be in the mountain, you're going to be writing a really potentially scary novel or short story?
Well, I would say more of a thriller. I would like to say thriller. I wouldn't say it was scary.
But then...
I'm not Stephen King.
You're in the mountains alone.
Yeah.
You can hear coyotes in the distance and owls. Do you think that would freak you out?
No, being brought in Glasgow, I think we hear a lot.
I've never seen a coyote in Glasgow in my life.
Wild dogs in the night. I think
I've seen a few dogs.
Yes, I'm saying. You know, I've heard a lot of wild dogs yelping in the night. I think
that was just Andy trying to record his first album. Your next object, Laura, is pencils and paper, and would you be drawing?
Absolutely not. No.
You know how to draw?
I do not. I don't have an artistic bone in my body, unfortunately. I wish I could draw, and I really admire people who can and who can. My mother is a beautiful painter and sculptor, but I just did not receive that gene. So
I'm the same. My brother's a great drawer. I have no artistic bone in my body either.
Yeah. So I would use it to write. I did inherit from my mother the ability to, well, maybe not the ability to write, but the passion to do so. So I enjoy writing poetry and just reflections. So I would probably use my time in the cabin to really reflect upon life and life's meaning and maybe write some good poetry. I've never really had time to sit down and really focus on my writing, and I would love to do that.
Now, when you write poetry, is it rhyming poetry or more like, I guess it's all interpretive, but
haikus?
I can't remember all the different types of poetry.
Well, it really doesn't have a specific structure. I actually try to encourage my students that they always have this impression that all poetry must rhyme, and it really doesn't have to.
In fact, some of the
yes. Well, if it is a sonnet, then yes. I do enjoy writing Shakespearean sonnets. So for those, yes, I would follow the rhyme scheme. But I enjoy writing free verse where, you know, you don't have to rhyme. It's more about just the way in which you put the words together and the images you create so that you form a unique impression and imagery for the reader so that they see things in a different way.
Would you write any short stories?
I have written short stories in the past. I do enjoy that. In fact, one day if I retire, one of my aspirations is to write a novel for adolescents. So that's something I would love to do.
And do you have any ideas of what the novel would be?
I think it would just focus on teenage angst, you know, working with teenagers for so many years. I've really been able to observe, gosh, the many facets of their lives and specific students and things that they've gone through. And so I have some wonderful stories that I could put down to paper. And I think teenagers and all of us really love to read something where it resonates with our own lives.
Yeah. I mean, one of our previous guests, James Pintati, he wrote a musical, middle school, was it?
Middle School Madness.
Middle School Madness. And he was basically kind of mirroring what you were saying there about, you know, feelings and angst and how everybody, you know, who is an adult and people who are in middle school can understand and, you know, the feelings would resonate with everybody because everybody can take themselves back to that.
Right.
So although it would maybe be a story written for adolescents, it could be written and read by adults who would then take themselves back to that moment again.
Absolutely. And I think as adults, we often, unless you work in a school or work with kids, you forget what it's like to be a kid sometimes.
Yes.
You become kind of jaded and secluded in your own adult world. And if you're not exposed to it, you kind of lose touch with just, you know, if you think back to when you were a teenager, you really felt everything with such extreme emotions. And people sometimes forget that.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, think small things like you think a musical artist wrote a song just for you in mind because your feelings are unique, you know.
Exactly.
But they're not, they're just completely general.
Right. Yeah.
And you said that your mom inspired you. She's a writer?
She is, yeah. She's published two books, one of fiction and one of nonfiction. And yes, she's a wonderful writer. One of her books, A Clear Destiny, is kind of a thriller. And, you know, I was helped her edit that book and really enjoyed watching her go through the process. It was very interesting to me. And so she certainly inspired me.
And was it published?
It was, yes.
Excellent. Yep.
Are there any, if you get time, are there books that you enjoy reading or going back to? I know you're really, really busy, but just reading for fun?
I do love to read for fun. I just never have time to actually do so. But lately I've been reading memoirs by Hemingway, and I love Ernest Hemingway. He's one of my favorite novelists, and he writes excellent short stories, I believe. So I enjoy reading him. And The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne, every time I reread that novel, I always find something new within the pages. So those are two authors that I really enjoy.
I don't read nearly enough. I wish I had the ambition to read more. And because when I do and when I get into a book, I really enjoy it. And I think it is so important, reading and writing. And
I think in this day and age of computers and Wikipedia and, you know, all the things that are at our fingertips in terms of knowledge, Google, I think nowadays we tend to read less. You know, if we get a bit of spare time, maybe, for example, if you're on a bus journey or a train journey, rather than take out a book and start, you know, read another chapter, you maybe jump on Google or Facebook or something like that. So the art of reading is kind of getting lost, unfortunately.
Published. I just love doing it. But and I also have written a children's book that's kind of a long-form children's book in the style of Harry Potter. It's not an illustrated book for toddlers. It's
Excellent.
Course, yeah. Would you be able to share the genre of your novel?
Sure. The novel that I wrote is called Birdie and the Beast, and it's about a young woman who comes of age in the mountains in a very small community that is being threatened with extinction due to big political forces. And so she grows up with a very special knowledge about the earth and things that grow and wildness. And she's going to be forced to make a choice to stay there where there will be very few people or leave and make a new life for herself. And then a man enters.
There's always, always a man, isn't there? There's always a man.
What's the literary term for that?
It's always his fault, and he was a skier.
Happiness.
Was he a skier by any chance?
No, he's a forest ranger.
Oh, right. Oh, well, don't tell us what happened. We'll find out when we read it.
I look forward to reading it once it gets published,
Okay. And now, I wrote a play about Maude Adams, who is the foremost American actress in the 1900s. She was the first Peter Pan. And her estate is right here on the mountain.
Wow.
It still exists.
And you wrote a book about her?
A play.
A play.
And a screenplay.
Right. And has it seen the light of day?
Not yet. It's been there's been readings of it. I haven't pushed it. I'm just not good at that. And I'm always like redoing stuff.
Push, so, goddammit, push.
I know. Yeah. I know.
Do you have any kids?
Yeah.
Well, you know how to push. Come on.
Good heavens, man.
I know. Yeah.
The next item you want to bring with you is your journal.
Yes. I think just to write down any thoughts or maybe, I don't know how many memories you have of being in a cabin by yourself, but...
Today I lost at Monopoly.
And also won.
Yes, I was playing it by myself, so that makes it really bad.
Pastor, your last item is a Bible. Why a Bible? Maybe that's a silly question to ask.
I was about to say, yeah. I think that's quite obvious.
Anyone listening is like, dumb.
You're out in nature, and you see all the beauty and wonder and glory. It's nice to be reminded of the one who created all that. You see, the creation is to lift us up to the Creator. And having the Bible there reminds me of who made all and who gave himself for me, Jesus Christ, on the cross, who is with me always, no matter, you know, I'm alone in the cabin, but the Lord is with me. And having his scripture nearby, his guidance, his direction, his hope, his forgiveness is a great source. And I wouldn't really want to go anywhere without the scriptures.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Did a little reading about the Bible, and we've had guests in the past bring Bibles, and
you brought a Bible when you were on.
Yeah, yeah. We've learned some interesting, you know, we look up some fun facts and things, and I found that dogs are mentioned 41 times in the Bible, you know, talking about dogs, but cats are never mentioned. Well, and I think that speaks to cats.
You know? Well, I'm not sure. If you look at the use of the word dog, it's not really used in very positive ways.
Oh, okay.
So it may be the cats may actually come a little better being omitted.
Come on, the cats.
Than the dogs who are discussed, but not in a very positive way for the most part.
Andy's kitty Ruby would appreciate this conversation.
Actually, Ruby has actually been on the show a couple of times because sometimes we've recorded at our house in the mountains and you can hear Ruby in the background.
Chasing some poor animal in a gladiator style.
Has there been any other animals mentioned in the Bible?
Oh, sure. Lots of animals are mentioned, all, you know, whether it's deer. One passage of scripture says, as a deer thirsts for water, so my soul thirsts for thee, O God. There are sea monsters and sea creatures that are mentioned.
Right.
And there are... of course, bear and lion. As a matter of fact, Jesus is portrayed as two things, which are kind of contradictory, but both are true, as a lamb, the Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world, as well as a lion, the Lion of Judah, who is strong to save his people.
Right.
So there's many illustrations in the Bible about animals. But I like the thought in terms of going back to the dog. Dog, as you probably know, spelled backward, is God.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any more loyal creature than a dog.
You want to take a Bible with you?
I do,
Why do you want to get a Bible?
Well, because, you know, God is important in my life. And I've never read the Bible from the beginning through to the end.
I don't think many people have.
Yeah. Well,
except the Pope or something.
You know what? It's such a well-read work, and it's something that I've always wanted. It's a goal of mine to read it from the beginning to the end at some point.
In one night?
And no, certainly not. But if I'm going to be on an island or in a cabin and by myself, why not have the company of God and the lessons that you learn from the Bible there with me?
Right. And when you're sitting scared because there's owls and
coyotes
and bells and... Then you start fabricating people trying to get in the house. You can just flick through the Bible.
Well, you know, lots of people find a lot of comfort from the Bible, and I am certainly not a survivalist, so I think that would be something I could turn to.
Now, I asked one of our other guests, actually it was our second guest ever, 2 years ago, if he knew what the shortest verse in the Bible was, and he knew it. Do you know what it is?
I do not, no.
Do you know, Mike?
I do, I remember that.
Yeah?
The shortest verse is Jesus wept.
Yes, Jesus wept. There you go.
Thank you.
So, then Lara wept.
And Bible,
right?
Bible is Greek for the books. That's the original root, and then it made its way into Rome, Latin, and Biblia, best-selling book of all time.
Yep,
over 5 billion copies, written over a 1600-year period by about 40 different guys. Time of the writing being 1500 BC to 100 AD, and many, many books written about and by various religions. But the Bible is the only one which claims to be the actual Word of God.
Is that right?
That, well, according to what I read. I mean,
yeah.
Not
do you have your own personalized Bible?
What do you mean by personalized?
But do you have one you've had maybe since you've had a, you were a kid or anything like that? Or?
Yes. My father was a very religious man. Right. And so he bought me a children's Bible that I still have today. And I also have his Bible. And I also have my grandmother's Bible and my great-grandfather's Bible. So right. I have quite a few.
Yeah.
Do you have one, Mike?
I do. I have a couple. I have a student Bible that I used for a long time after I was confirmed in high school. And I got another Bible recently for Christmas. And it's interesting. I'm fascinated by the different translations. They're translating from Aramaic and Greek and,
right.
and Latin. And, you know, in those languages, they're using phrases and illustrations that are foreign to us. So I think depending on the translation you use, the more modern translations, you sometimes get the feel better for what they're trying to say, but you don't get the word for word exact. And that's fascinating. I like researching that and reading about it.
I wonder if anybody's got a signed copy, you know, like maybe a signing event. God was there and, you know, they spoke to them while they were waiting. And
that would be worth
to sign it, man.
Quite a bit.
Maybe.
50 million on eBay, wouldn't it be great, wouldn't it? What's the incredible. Biggest fish? What's the biggest fish you've caught?
Ever?
No lying, no.
You mean in the Catskills?
No, yeah, anyway. Let's start with the Catskills and then see where this goes.
All right.
Well, some years ago, in a place
here we go. Some years ago,
many years ago, there are two lakes up near to
this better be good, by the way.
Yeah, there's a one called Capra Lake.
Do you know it, Mike?
No,
and
no.
It's a private lake. And then below there is Colgate Lake, which is a public area where people swim during the summertime.
The proletariat go there. You were in the upper class lake.
I weaseled my way into.
Weaseled his way in. Who did you know? Knew the local judge or something.
I had heard from a friend who was good friends with the caretaker there that there were some monsters.
Were you trespassing?
No, I got permission. Because, to make a long story short, I was working for the Boys Clubs of America doing an after-school program. Right. And the Boys Clubs had jurisdiction up there. And when I learned about those big trout, I formulated my plan to appeal to them. And they didn't want to do it. And they didn't want to do it. And they finally said, all right, look, you get there before daylight. And you get out of there when you hear the first announcement on the public address system for everybody to assemble. We don't want you mingling with any of the kids. You know, we want you to be on your way. And so I showed up, and it was in the middle of August, the dark of the moon, and there was a storm, and it was windy old weather in the extreme.
There's a windy old weather.
Oh yeah, it was blowing. Stormy old weather, and when the wind blows, we all cast together, you see. I took with me a very, very dear friend, an old fisherman who tied his own flies, and the two of us.
Yeah.
I put my car topper, my little boat on the top of my car, and we put in at the outlet of the stream this lake, and we rode in the stormy old weather. We rode and rode all the way up to where the stream came out of the mountain. Now this lake was filled with wild native brook trout, which were the trout that were here before we got here. And you know what they did, you know, when they came out of the hillside, went down in that lake and said, "Oh my God, this is so full of food. I'm staying here. You know, I'm not going back up there where you get an occasional beetle or an ant. You know, when we can, you know, eat minnows and crayfish and
this
all
was the promised land.
They've come to the promised land. Well, we arrived there, and then in this storm came. There was a quiet moment, and we started to see all kinds of fish rising. Because there was something that they were going after. My little fly computer was going overtime and it was about to crash, and then suddenly I saw what they were taking. And I told my friend, "I've got an imitation of it. We're going to start catching some fish." And we did. We got some beauties. And then all of a sudden I started to hear that gut-wrenching sound of the public address.
Oh, no.
So I said, "All right, George, one more cast apiece. They're not really
we're stretching the boundaries of what we should be doing.
We were really stretching it. So we each took a cast, and the cast settled to the bottom, and I crept that fly across the bottom very slowly, and damn, I felt like I just hooked a log. But guess what? It was not a log. It was the biggest fish I ever caught in the Catskills. It was a 5.5-pound brook trout, and that's a monster in the Catskills. The fish took off like a freight train.
You can be in a lake and a big boat can go by, and we just bob in the water, and it's just pure fun.
Catch a fish, fry it up.
Yeah.
Save the grease, pour it in the Jeep.
Jeep. Yeah, we're ready to go.
If only everyone had a teddy bear to squeeze once in a while.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, when you're staring down the gun barrel into nuclear war, just reach over, squeeze your teddy bear, and think, you know, life's not so bad. Let's put the cover back over that button. And
absolutely.
And, well, you're not bringing any drinks or anything, but I was going to say have a drink. Like a coffee.
Oh, yeah, but I should have brought something to hydrate myself with.
But why a teddy bear?
Oh, why a teddy bear? Well, it's something I had for years. I still technically have it, though it's in a closet in my parents' house.
Does the teddy bear have a name?
Teddy.
Teddy. Nice.
I didn't get really creative with the name. I thought I was very original back then, but apparently everybody had a teddy bear named Teddy.
It works.
Right. Yeah. And it was just something I slept with in my bed for my youth, you know, when I was 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. I just 10, had it in
11,
my bed.
12, 13, 14.
Yeah, probably much longer than I should have. But I have a memory of this one time my parents had a yard sale, and I go out to see the yard sale, and there's my teddy bear in the yard sale for $2. And I said, "Mom, what the heck?" And she's like, "You're too old for that." And I said, "No, I am most certainly not." And I pulled it back away. And I took it back. And it's just, you know, when you asked me to pick things from different items of my life, different moments of my life, I thought that was, you know, a tangible possession that I really have good memories of just having. And I think it's something people do where you, what's the word, anthropomorphize inanimate objects when you're young. And right. I just have fond memories of doing that. And
so Teddy means something to you?
Yeah, it's... You know, it's a connection to my youth. It's a connection to my childhood. And I think as I move through adulthood, I'm 32 now, I still find it's important to remember that you're not far removed from a kid. And you can't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah. What did you think of the movie Ted?
Oh, I thought it was hilarious.
Have you seen Ted 2?
Yes. I just watched it a couple weeks ago. And that Tom Brady scene was hilarious.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, my God. The Tom Brady scene.
Didn't see it.
Where they try to... I'm not going to go and tell you what they're trying to do.
Spoiler
with
alert. Spoiler alert.
There's a scene with Tom Brady in it, and it is just hilarious. One of the funniest... One of the finest pieces of cinema I've ever seen.
So would it freak you out if you were sitting in the cabin and all of a sudden Teddy went, "Hey, Josh, how about a drink?"
Yeah, I'd probably, you know, poor Teddy, I'd probably grab that 308 real quick. And
and you know, Ted is just one of the films that the teddy bear has made an appearance in. Winnie the Pooh, Paddington Bear, all films and cartoons and things that, that bears have been brought into since they were first created in November. No, that's not when they were created, November 19. Teddy Roosevelt went bear hunting in Mississippi in November of 1902 and hadn't caught anything. He was with a bunch of guys, and he's, you know, the president, and some other attendants chased down and captured a bear, tied it to a tree, and they brought the president over and said, you know, you haven't gotten one. Here's one for you to shoot, and he refused, saying that unsportsmanlike. And this started the whole teddy bear fad. A gentleman named Morris Mictum saw a political cartoon that was drawn, kind of caricaturing the event, and he's like, hey, could make little bears and sell them. That'd be great. And he actually sent one to Teddy Roosevelt and got permission from Roosevelt to use the name Teddy in the advertising and naming of the bears. Wow. And I just coincidentally in Germany, a gentleman also made and started to sell stuffed bears.
Steiff.
It was Steiff.
Ha ha.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
How do you know that?
Well, when I went to Glasgow University. Now your next item, Alana. Is it a muumuu
from Mexico?
Yeah, well, because the information I have on a muumuu is that it was originally from Hawaii.
Oh,
yeah. Yes. Did you know that? Did you know?
Yeah, I don't know if the thing that I have is technically a muumuu, but it I think of it as a muumuu. Hmm.
So, can you explain to the audience, the listeners, what a muumuu is?
A muumuu is, I guess, originally a Polynesian outfit, but it's kind of just a big old cotton or rayon kind of shirt dress that's very baggy. Mm. I associate it with the 70s and kind of like ladies hanging around in their muumuus, you know, often with a print, like a brightly colored print on it.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like lounge wear.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's one of those things that you could just maybe just hang out and, you know, you come home from work and you throw in your muumuu, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
You just, I'm no doing it in the night. I'm just going to relax and just throw in my muumuu.
Yeah. I think it's sort of like the, I associate it with a kind of like decadence of like, you know, oh, you don't have to go anywhere, do anything. You can just lounge around in your muumuu.
Muumuu out.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if George Costanza would have ever gotten a velvet muumuu.
Oh, wow.
A velvet muumuu?
Yeah. He, in that one episode, wore the velvet sweatsuit. Just because he had, you know, kind of given up. And well, there was one I think where he had given up, and another where his girlfriend was okay with it, so he wore one. I can't remember. But
it was funny you say that. In a TV program, there was someone who wore a muumuu. Mm. In the Simpsons episode, King Size Homer, after gaining 61 pounds in order to claim disability and work from home, Homer wears a muumuu.
Oh.
As his regular clothes no longer fit him.
I remember that episode. It was great.
Homer lets himself go.
We're going to talk about kind of radio and animation comics and stuff later on. So I thought this was quite interesting. That in an animated US sitcom, Drawn Together, Toot Bernstein wore a muumuu in the episode Toot Goes Bollywood. So there you go.
Uh-huh.
And John Fisher, drummer of rock band Fish, is known for wearing a blue and red muumuu during live performances. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
So there you are.
Nice.
I've never seen Fish perform.
In the movie Snakes in a Plane, Mrs. Bova, portrayed by actress Anne Warm Pegg, wears a blue muumuu. Later, a snake is seen going up through her muumuu.
Oh dear. I enjoyed that. Have you seen that movie?
I've never seen it.
Oh. I saw it in the theaters back when I was in college.
Yep.
Yes, I enjoyed it.
Nothing to take too seriously.
It's kind of just that one line, you know, is really the whole point of the movie. Like
There's
once you see the
many
famous,
damn snakes.
yeah. So once you have seen that, sort of the whole thing.
I've never seen it. Never seen it.
find a haggis purveyor, and it was kind of difficult. So I was like, well, it looks like I'm going to have to make this. And it turns out that sheep stomach is illegal.
Yeah, so, is it really?
Yeah.
Illegal.
I tried to like go underground about it. So I'm like, you know, calling farms and butchers. I'm like, hey, look, you know, can you get me some sheep stomach on the side?
It seems like an episode of Seinfeld or something, you know?
Yeah, I wound up in some shady places with Scottish people. It was awkward.
Sheep dealers.
Yeah.
Now, Brian, can you name some of the names the Beatles had before the actual Beatles?
Well, no, the Silver Beatles.
Right. What were they before the Silver Beatles?
My memory's shocking now. I could tell you all of this years ago when I studied them.
They were the Beatles.
Yes, they changed the
instead
spelling,
of the Beatles.
Yes.
It was B-E-A-T-A-L-S, and that was... that name was given to them by Stuart Sutcliffe as a tribute to Buddy Holly and the Crickets.
Well, my thoughts were that the initial name was Beatles with double E because of the Crickets, yeah.
According to what I'm reading here, it says the Beatles as in Beat Als, A-L-S, as opposed to L-E-S. Now, the first ever name they had as a coming together of people...
Andy, just to interrupt you, they settled on the Beatles as they are. It's the Beat.
Yeah.
B-E-A-T. So it was the Beat, as in, so it was a
play
on words.
Yeah, yeah, I know that.
Beatles, but yeah. Okay.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No?
Like keeping a beat with music.
Oh, did you know
yes.
that?
I had I did not know that.
Ah, right.
Interesting.
But the very first name they had was the Blackjacks. Before they became the Quarrymen.
Yeah, the Quarrymen, of course, yeah.
And then they build themselves...
Well, John Lennon had the Quarrymen, and Paul McCartney joined the Quarrymen.
And then they briefly called themselves Johnny and the Moondogs.
Yikes.
Yeah.
And the Beatles, the Silver Beatles, and then the Beatles.
Fantastic.
There you are. Your next item is a Bible.
Yes.
Now, I'm not going to ask you the daft question, what do you need a Bible for? But... what do you need a Bible for?
Well, I mean, my faith is very important to me, and as Catholic and Christian, and something I do try to read a little bit each night. And I think if I was especially up in the Catskills, with all that natural beauty around, it would be very appropriate.
Yeah.
Like God's beauty.
Are you a guy who likes the silence?
Yes.
Right.
I don't mind being alone and having some peace and quiet.
Right, okay. Because up there, in the dead of night, you do hear things.
Sure.
Owls,
you do.
Coyotes, you know, other animals and stuff like that. Would that freak you out? There are known, also are some people with masks and chainsaws and stuff like that.
Well, now you'll never get me up there. I think it would probably... startled me at first until I got used to it, and then did some reading or playing or something to get my mind off of it so I couldn't hear it.
I mean, a lot of people take a Bible, don't they, Mike?
Yes, it is a common object.
And,
taken, common
you know,
item.
And I think it does give a lot of people some peace of mind, you know?
Mm, it does. Well, and I think being in a cabin in the wilderness in the Catskills, which is picturesque, and you know, I think it is probably a religious experience. It's soothing, and especially if you're alone and it's quiet and you can be with nature. That's my experience anyway. Anytime I go out backpacking in the Catskills or get to spend some time outside, it's gorgeous sunsets and sunrises and the wildlife and the landscape. It's amazing. And, bust out your Bible and start reading about it.
You know, and it is inspirational, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Do you guys know who the oldest person is in the Bible?
I'm going to say, oh boy, Moses?
Oh, you're so close. It does start with an M.
I'll give you one then. Mark.
No, but good guess. He's an M name.
Thanks, Victor, soothing me there, Mike.
Good job.
Get partial credit for that.
good choice, Andy.
It's Methuselah.
Oh.
He is credited as being...
Wait. Did you say close, Andy?
Well, because it's an M name, and which is good, you know.
Which is why I said Mark.
But you had to sift through the files up there in your cranium to figure, you know, M names in the Bible. You know, you couldn't go with Marge or Marty, you know. So I don't know.
I think it was a good... Anyways, it's Methuselah. He's credited as being the oldest person to have ever lived, dying at the age of 969 years. But it is thought that this is a mistranslation and that he was actually 969 lunar months old, which is 78.5 years, which in our current understanding of human physiology and longevity...
is more realistic.
Is more, yeah, probably definitely around 80 years old. And in the early Judaic tribes used lunar months to gauge time. So probably a mistranslation. Dude lived to be about 80.
So your next item is your... Bible.
Yeah. I started reading the Bible late in life. I'm not a churchgoer, and I wasn't raised in a particularly religious home, but I think it's definitely the Holy Bible. It's definitely imbued
as opposed to the unholy Bible.
Yeah, and it's beautiful, and you know, from as literature, it's beautiful, but also you know, the wisdom in it and the history, and it's just a fascinating.
You know, I was reading about it. Sorry to interject there.
That's it.
I was reading this thing, and it's quite an interesting thing that I found. It's quite an amazing book. Now, incredibly, there are no contradictions in the Bible, right? Huh. Various people claim to find contradictions, but they have to take verses out of context to do so.
Hmm.
When looking at the Bible as a whole and understanding its teachings, there are no contradictions. This is amazing when one considers that the Bible was written over such a long period of time.
And when they found the Dead Sea Scrolls...
which I've seen.
Wow. That
in Glasgow, a museum.
That they were true to what's in the Bible. It's just amazing. It's an amazing piece.
Despite centuries of translation and centuries of transcription, that the wording can be so identical.
Right, word of God. It's just really, really fascinating. And I'm always questioning. I'm not dogmatic in my beliefs, and I certainly love hearing about faith, you know, everyone's faith or everyone's doubt, but I do value the Bible.
I think that the Bible at face value is about love and about forgiveness and understanding and empathy. I think that's the key message.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes people get tripped up when they want to make the Bible maybe a science manual, or they want to follow all the legalities, all the rules, and that's when it's like, oh golly, Jesus, this book of Leviticus is pretty rough, you know?
And it is, but that was the Christ came to say, that's all fine and good, but really... really, you're just supposed to love each other.
Yeah.
You know, like when those rules start to get in the way of you loving each other, maybe you should take a second look. So, and that's really hard to do. It's you know, simple, but very hard to do.
Judd, what was the biggest fish that you have ever caught?
The biggest fish I ever caught was down in the Bahamas. And it was a yellowtail tuna of about 77 pounds. It was not caught on a fly, though.
77 pounds?
Yeah.
Wow.
Not on a fly rod.
Not on a fly rod.
Snap. Were you using a crane?
We were trolling, you know, big lures, you know, that skipped along in the wake of the boat, and these monsters would come up and just hammer them.
And you know, whoever in our world, in terms of leaders and people in power, want to accept it or not, the overall overwhelming view is that climate change is having a huge impact on the earth, and therefore we need to make sure that we rise to the challenge of that and make changes. And one of the things that I do see that you're involved in is alternative forms of fuel, etc.
Oh, that's very exciting.
Energy,
yeah.
and I'm all for that too.
You're gonna have to meet our little Jeep. It's a little biodiesel.
Well, I was going to come to that. I was going to ask you about that. Does your Jeep smell of hamburgers?
It does.
Oh,
it smells like McDonald's, especially when we can get the biodiesel in it.
Right,
so,
right.
And Bridget likes to drive it.
Yeah.
It's yeah, it's fun.
So I heard somebody
got a little spunk.
Yeah, somebody told me years ago that they got some, I think it was from a well-known donut place. That
Krispy Kreme.
That they get the oil from them to put in their car, and they would be driving in the road and their car smelled of, you know, like cooking donuts and
yeah,
stuff like
it,
that.
It
you
does.
Know?
It's got a cool smell to it. It's clean. Very. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
But, you know, but on a serious note, you know, there's obviously wind power and one of the things that they're doing in Britain, off the shores of Britain, is wave power.
Yes.
And I think these things
tidal wave generators,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely,
yeah. Wave generators.
Vital to how we go forward.
They are. As a matter of fact, I serve on the Environmental Conservation Committee, and we were just talking about that with the Public Service Commission. And ultimately, the big challenge with renewables, especially wind and solar, hydro, is that it tends to be intermittent.
Yes.
So one of our challenges is, what are we doing to build an infrastructure that allows us to capture the energy when it's generated, hold it in abeyance, and then release it when it's needed. So, so ironically, near Prattsville is the Gilboa Pump Storage Project,
right,
which pumps water up, uses kinetic energy, pumps it to a reservoir at peak, and then during peak demand releases it through a tunnel and generates electricity just using the kinetic release of the kinetic energy. So,
oh, cool. I didn't even realize
so,
that.
Yeah, it's a big storage battery. So we need more projects like that or similar storage mechanisms so that solar, wind, hydro can be more effective as a regular source.
I have high hopes for batteries, you know, like the new Tesla power pack that you can buy and put in your basement and
exactly
helpful.
That's
that,
another. Yeah. Many people who are off the grid, they have battery arrays in their homes.
Yeah.
So they'll store it in their battery systems. And when the power is needed, they'll draw from the battery and then recharge it when the sun's shining or the wind's blowing.
Yeah, and right now, you know, it's expensive. It's not really practical, maybe for the mass public. But, you know, I look back and think of how far battery technology has come just in the past 10 years. You know, 20 years ago, there's no way an iPhone would have been possible unless you had like 10D batteries hooked to it. And
yeah, that's my biggest frustration is the use in economic terms. They talk about barrier to entry. It's just prohibitive. So our goal as a society should be to make the technology available and affordable.
Yes.
So people can get it in their homes and make use of it. Net metering is kind of a step in between. And you see these solar companies that are installing the hardware on the home and at no expense to the owner, but then they don't give the full discount of the solar, but they give a blended rate. So your rate is reduced. But I look forward to the day when I'm off the umbilical cord of the utility. I think that's exciting.
Yeah. My girlfriend, Julia, she would love to be doing that. She would love to be off the grid.
Yeah,
it's
fun.
Chickens.
It sounds mysterious. I'm off the grid. Yeah, it's like a spy movie.
You know, but there was a program years ago in the 70s, The Good Life, it was called, in Britain. And the idea was that one neighbour in a middle class area decided to live off the fat of the land in a urban area, you know, have chickens and all that. And the middle class neighbour next door was ridiculing her. And it seemed like a silly notion back then. Nowadays, it's more of a realistic notion, and it's becoming, you know,
it is
something that we would say, well, that's attainable.
Yeah, it is, and people are yearning for it in many ways. And look at our food production, too. People want local food. They want to see sustainability. That phrase is now having meaning throughout our
farm
community.
Farm to table,
100-mile diet, all of that.
People... You know, I've had this discussion with my friends before. You know, if you look at television programs and there's maybe 10 programs on that, really they're not very good programs. And people say, yeah, but people are watching them. But people are watching them because that's all they've got. If you give somebody something better, they're going to watch something better. It's the same principle with life. If you give somebody an opportunity that's better than what they have, they're going to take it.
Of course, of course.
Yeah. You see, you see in your bio that you work in a auto... Is it parts?
Yeah, an auto parts store, sure.
Now, what's the most popular part that you sell?
Probably just oil and filters. People doing oil changes, which is something everybody has to do. Outside of that, brakes, rotors, and then exhausts. And this is so funny because I'm not mechanical. I work in an auto parts store. I can't fix anything. So people come in and they're like, yeah, I'm going to put an exhaust on my truck and I'm going to put brakes and rotors. And, oh, how do you think? Is that going to work? And I'm like, I have no idea how to even put windshield wipers on. So I'm always fascinated by the broad range of people that come in and get auto parts and are going to go back to their house and do it themselves, because I can't do anything like that.
I'm the same.
Yeah, me too.
Although I can put on windshield wipers.
I can't. It's a struggle.
My wife had to show me.
Your wife's had to show you a lot of things. Cooking. Yeah. Washing, coffee making.
She's really good at all this stuff.
And she did make a really good soup tonight.
You know, she could leave it to me, and the windshield wipers would be on backwards, and the metal would be scraping the windshield.
Right.
I could make food, and the kitchen would, like, I don't know, turn into this ashen...
It's better if she just helps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
We'll leave it there.
I need help, okay?
Now, your next item that you're going to take with you is your... dirty hiking shoes.
Yes. This is sort of a lame choice because I don't have a really good story about it.
Do you know of any clean hiking shoes?
Clean. My hiking shoes are crusted in mud and I just haven't rinsed them off.
Well, that just shows you that you use them then, doesn't it?
Broken. Yeah. I just thought, what would I take with me? And that is definitely something, like the first thing that popped into my head that I would bring.
Hmm. I'm just picturing you standing there dancing to Sly and the Family Stone with a moo moo on and dirty hiking shoes.
Yeah.
I don't know though. I think I would have to take them off outside the cabin. I don't know if they'd be allowed in the cabin.
That's good. We wouldn't want to have to clean it up either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a real cabin?
Of course there's a real cabin.
Is there a boogeyman in the cabin?
We can't tell you that.
Okay.
Surprise.
If you look in our website, you'll see the cabin.
You send your guests to the real cabin.
And if you look in the woods, you'll see the face of a little boy that wasn't there when we took the photograph. The next thing we're going to talk about is a fishing pole.
Perfect.
What kind of fishing pole, Pete?
I just use a spinning reel, you know, freshwater pole. I'm just a basic amateur fisherman, but we love to fish. Now, I also loves to fish.
Do you like worm and bobber, sit, relax, have a Coca-Cola? Yeah. Or do you more actively like bob?
Most of the time lure? It's just the worm, but depending on who's with us, sometimes it's cast them in, cast them out, depends. But actually, there's a secret if you're going to be a good worm fisherman.
Hmm. What's up?
Well, some of our listeners may be a little disgusted by this, but you got to make sure there's nothing on your hands, so no colognes or bug sprays, because that repels the fish. They sense that. Mm. But you have to put a little spit on the worm.
Oh.
And get it nice and mucousy, and that kind of masks the human scent. And also, the second trick is if...
What if you've just been drinking coffee?
You've been drinking coffee? No, I don't know.
Or beer or
yeah,
Coca-Cola.
Well, just I don't know. I hadn't thought about that. It might attract them a little bit. Who knows? But the other piece is if it gets hit. If you hit it... and there's a little bit of worm left, you keep it on there. That's like gold. So you just add more worm to it. You don't take that off.
So
a couple tricks of the trade for our listeners.
The fish can tell that other fish have been interested.
Oh, yeah. It just reels them right in. Absolutely.
What kind of fish do you like to fish for?
Whatever we can get. But usually we like freshwater lakes, so bass and lake trout and whatever we can get. Otsego Lake is one of my favorite lakes to fish in. We like to swim and fish there. But wherever...
Now, I'm pulling rank here. I can't tell you the location, but we have been invited to a secret location in the Catskills.
Trout fishing.
Fly fishing.
Oh, cool. Cool. I've never been fly fishing.
From a master fly fisher.
Awesome. Oh, that sounds like fun. Yeah. That's an art. That's an art form.
Judd Weisberg.
Yeah. But he's going to make us get up at like 4 a.m, so yeah. I don't know about that.
Yeah, so we'll not be going.
I'm just a ham and egger. That's an art form. Fly fishing.
Now, there are some fishermen's superstitions that I got from the NOAA.gov website. And this one, I think, is particularly relevant to today. The first is, a woman on board makes the seas angry and is an omen of bad luck. All the more reason Bridget probably should not come to the cabin to accompany.
I have a big problem with that. Because that was my first request, and I was denied. I said, but Bridget come? No. Why can't you? No. Stop whining. Okay.
Yep. That's right. One person. Bridget can be on another show.
I tried.
And she will not be able to bring you.
So.
Ah, life's not fair.
And another interesting fact, black cats are considered good luck and will bring a sailor home from the sea. And also, Pete, if you play a fiddle or guitar, the fish will come to the surface because they love the music. And one of the objects you'd like to bring is...
a classical guitar.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if you know, if you run out, if you get snagged and you snap your line, you could take one of those...
Use it, just unstring the guitar strings, and use it. That's right. You know? Loop them together. That's true. That's true. But
don't need to fret about it. Sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry. Oh, golly.
Oh, geez. Andy. Oh, gosh. Hits a responsive chord, though. That's okay.
You guys are way out of tune tonight. Here. Come on.
Oh, come on now.
The best impersonation of a...
So every day they had people...
favorite TV.
Didn't they?
Yeah, it was every day. You know, you phone in and they chose a winner of the day and the best of the week.
And then you win like
the
a
entertainment system,
television, and a year supply of ice cream.
Well, home entertainment system sounds, you know, very lavish.
Yeah, and I'm thinking speakers time, and a cabinet. But, and
yeah,
a TV.
Yeah, and you think maybe something like, you know, 35, 40, 50 inch TV.
Yeah,
as they were just, you know, becoming the rage at the time, and. It turned out to be an old 27-inch heavy, old-fashioned TV.
Aww.
With a very small DVD player and a selection of choice DVDs. But yeah, you mentioned that the a year supply of ice cream, which we got, which came in 12 vouchers, which we cashed in the first three, then promptly hid the following nine very well, so well in fact I couldn't find them again.
Oh no.
But yeah, it was good fun.
So who did you impersonate?
It was from Hannibal. It was just out at that time.
So can you give us a wee blast?
I don't know.
Come on, hurry up, get any character, come on.
Give me something.
Dear Clarice, I follow you. Followed with enthusiasm the cause of your disgrace and public shaming. But mine never bothered me. That's
can,
what it's
Brian, can you say hello?
As much as I can remember.
Can you just say hello, Clarice?
Hello, Clarice.
Brilliant.
Yeah?
I can see why he won.
Mike, you're good at impersonation, aren't you?
Hello, Clarice.
No, I can't do any of that. But you can do like Family Guy, can you?
Yeah, I can do a lot of the Family Guy voices.
Can you give me one?
Oh, Peter, how's it going? My name is Cleveland, and I live down the road. Things seem to happen to me all the time when I'm in the bathtub.
No.
And you can do... what's that other guy?
Quagmire. Giggity. All right.
It's very good, Mike. Very good.
Thank you. A leather man.
Now, I'll be honest, I don't know what a leather man is. Is it a leather man?
No. You were waiting to say that. You know, it's like a utility knife.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like advanced Swiss Army knife kind
right,
of thing.
Right.
They're awesome. My father-in-law got me one, and the thing is like, it's the ultimate MacGyver accessory.
Perfect way to put it.
Yeah.
You know. Mike has a crack knife that you never... no, I tell a lie. It cuts sausage with it.
Sometimes. It's for backpacking. It's a Gerber blade. So it's this, just an awesome, sharp, semi-serrated knife that I never use because it's so awesome.
I want to dull it. Yeah.
So what would you use this knife for, well, this leather like, man?
You know, it's better to have it and, you know, not need it than need it and not have it. That's right. The thing just about a leather man. You know, so it's a pliers and a screwdriver and a knife and a scissors and, you know, all of the things wrapped up into one. And if, you know, my sense was that if I'm going to be alone, one never knows what's going to happen. What one's going to have to, you know, pull out the MacGyver head and try to fix. And I've thought that, like, you know, I have only four things to bring.
Yeah.
One of them better be something to fix something that goes wrong, you know, as opposed to trying to just use my, you know, phalanges.
As Phil wrestled with the bear, he struggled to get the blade
leather man out.
But thankfully the screwdriver twisted the bear's nipple and he ran off.
Better than him staying with the pliers.
Oh man.
Oh heaven, you're
not here for the hunting, are you, Phil?
Did you guys see the Revenant?
Oh yeah,
Leonardo DiCaprio. Oh gosh, we were talking about that today, and that is just the most guttural rough movie. Great. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I saw it on a plane. It was fighting a tiger or something, wasn't he?
A grizzly bear.
That's what it was, a grizzly bear.
Yeah.
Ugh. And
He was like buried alive and stuff.
Yeah.
We're just ruining this movie for people. Somebody's listening to this show just haven't been to Redbox.
Oh, thanks.
Driving home.
I saw actually.
He lives, by the way. He lives. Just sorry.
Terrible. Just terrible. Somebody is now turning around to go back to the Redbox. I saw a black bear crossing the road just the other morning.
Yeah.
On the way into work, yeah.
Just to get to the other side.
Yeah. That's all he did.
Cigarette and glasses on.
He waved at me, had a cup of coffee, and that's another story. That's when I was going to work, and the three ducks passed a lady on the sidewalk like they were on their way to work, too. They walked in opposite directions. A lady and three ducks just passed each other. I was like, okay. But this bear, actually, I pulled over and stopped.
First, where?
This was in Greenville.
Right.
Right next to there's a pond in the
duck
center
pond.
Of town. Yeah, there's a duck pond, runoff pond. And there are ducks living there, and I'm just
driving. They call it a waddle-off pond. The middle.
And so I'm driving through town, and this lady's walking on the sidewalk, and I look, and these three ducks in single file just walk right by her. They pass each other in opposite directions.
And they were like, morning.
Yeah. And so anyways, this bear, I pulled over to look at this bear and try to get a picture. And he ran down into the ditch, up into the woods. And as I stopped, he stood up and kind of looked at me. And then he kind of did this like jumping around maneuver and ran away.
Do you know what was happening when he was doing that?
Trying to see me?
No, he was singing, I'm the king of the swingers.
Oh, it's Baloo.
But yeah, knife bag. I travel with it all the time. But, you know, it's kind of cheating when it comes to the four items because, you know, it's really filled with a lot of stuff. And I'm embarrassingly sentimental. And there's items in there. I have a risotto spoon, like a flat
Ooh.
Spoon that was my grandmother's, maybe even my great grandmother's. I swiped it from the draw. I was like, you know what, this means something. So it's gonna.
I can imagine you just in a violent situation. You've got your bag in the back of the car, and you say to the people who are picking a fight with you, "Stand back! I have tools in here that could cause you harm, like this potato peeler."
Well, you know, there was one time that I was going to culinary school, and I was on the train on Metro North heading into Manhattan to French culinary, and I needed something from my knife bag because it kind of doubles as like your school bag, your briefcase, whatever. You got all your stuff tucked in there. So I unzipped it, and this thing, it does look like something from Dexter. It's basically, you know, a whole row of knives splayed out, blades sticking up. So when you unroll it and you lift the flap, you know, some guy looked over, some poor businessman looks over, and he's like, "Oh my God, I'm going to die on this train." Like, oh boy. So I just closed it real quick, and I was like, "Oh, do-do-do-do." Let me open a cookbook and make this seem legitimate.
No, it's just more suspicious when you behave that way. You know, something hilarious that I saw recently, since we just recently passed the Ides of March, was a Julius Caesar knife block.
Oh.
So it's a little Julius Caesar statue with a bunch of knives in his back. It's hilarious.
Nice. I saw a lot of the Instagrammers posting a Caesar dressing with a knife stuck in it.
Awesome.
But yeah, so the knife bag, you know, there's a lot of sentimental stuff. I collect a lot of old knives, and especially things from family members. You know, it's nice to carry that tradition on. This way when I'm cooking, I think about them. And, you know, and since it's something that's always with me, you know, whether I'm catering or cooking at home, it's nice to have that connection to things.
Sure.
So.
All the stories I told are absolutely true with no exaggeration. Oh, well, maybe a little.
Those are some of our favourite moments from last year. Both of us are looking forward to 2017 and the fun that we will have getting to know our future guests that little bit better. We would like to thank you for listening throughout the past year, and to end the show, we would like to reflect on some of our guests' responses to our trademark question.
How do you take your coffee?
You know what? It depends on my mood. Sometimes I have it just straight black, and other times I'll have it with Bailey's French Vanilla Creamer.
Black.
Black.
Strong?
Strong.
You're some man.
Decaf, mostly, but I'll once in a while a little sugar and cream just as a treat.
I take it strong and local with little bit of milk.
Ah.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know what? I haven't had a cup of coffee in 40 years.
Milk and sugar.
Oh, with a small shot of hot skimmed milk.
I don't drink coffee anymore.
With raw honey.
Me? Half and half with one scoop of sugar.
Black.
What type of coffee?
I love Gavalia that I make at home.
Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
And you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations. Special thanks to George, Gordon and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone at WGXC, thanks.
Merry Christmas and have a Happy New Year.